March 24th, 1994, Silicon Valley, California. 26-year-old Matt Flores arrives at a training session for his new job. After parking his car in the building's lot, an unknown assailant shoots Matt in the back of the head. Even though there were more than 20 people in the lot, and it was covered by security cameras, the killer manages to flee the scene without being seen, and the only clue turns out to be surveillance footage of a suspicious-looking Ford Explorer. The investigation fails to uncover any discernible motive for Matt's murder, leading to suspicion that he was a victim of mistaken identity. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest minisode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and today I will be profiling another case which was featured on Unsolved Mysteries, the 1994 murder of Matt Flores. And I gotta tell you, this case has to rank as one of the top 10 most baffling and frustrating mysteries ever featured on the show. This is the terrifying story of a good man who seemed to have an ideal life and a great future before it was instantly taken away from him as he showed up for work one morning. And no one has any idea why. You would not expect a person to be murdered in their workplace parking lot in broad daylight when there were over 20 potential witnesses in the vicinity, but that's exactly what happened here. And 23 years later, we still don't have the faintest clue who the killer was, or what their possible motive could have been. I've wanted to cover this case on this podcast since day one, since it is about as close to a perfect crime as you can get, and I'd really love to see it solved. But before we get started, just a brief reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast which alternates between our regular full-length episodes and 15 to 20-minute minisodes like this one. We deliver either a new full-length episode or a new minisode every Wednesday. We're currently available for download on several platforms, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play Music. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it and leave us a rating or a review because that will help us garner more exposure. The Trail Went Cold also has its own PayPal account and a donate button on the website. If there's anyone out there who's feeling generous and wants to make a donation, we would greatly appreciate it and we'll be sure to give you a shout out on a future episode. We've also received some donations these past few weeks from listeners named Oliver, Hannah, Heather, and Dion. So, thank you very much, folks. And incidentally, Dion just happens to hail from my original hometown of Orangeville, Ontario, so it's awesome to receive some love from there. So with all that out of the way, let us now examine the truly perplexing murder of Matt Flores. Our story begins in Santa Clara, California in 1994. Our central figure is 26-year-old Matt Flores, who originally hails from Rhode Island, but has spent the last several years living in Georgia with his wife Denise, and the couple have an 8-month-old daughter named Danielle. Matt has just been honorably discharged from the Army after being posted at Fort Stewart. His stint lasted 4 years, and involved serving as a second lieutenant in Operation Desert Storm. Now that Matt is a civilian again, he and his family are now preparing for the next chapter of their lives, and he has just received a new job with a computer company called Applied Materials Incorporated. Since the company's headquarters are located in Silicon Valley, Matt and his family will be making temporary residence in Santa Clara while he undergoes a 2-month training session. After that, they will relocate to Dallas, where Matt will begin working as a process engineer at the company's office there. On the morning of March 24th, Matt drove to Silicon Valley in a white Chevy Corsica his employer had provided to him. This will be his 9th day of training at Applied Materials at the Applied Materials Technical Training Center, which is a series of different buildings located on Bowers campus. At 8:12 a.m., Matt drove into the parking lot of Building 12 for what should have been a routine workday, but within 2 minutes, he would be dead. After parking his vehicle in an unassigned spot in the middle of the lot, Matt climbed out of the car when he suddenly received a gunshot to the back of the head at point-blank range, killing him instantly. One witness was sitting in her car and recalled hearing what sounded like a popping sound before she noticed Matt's body in a kneeling position outside his driver's side door. She ran over to investigate and called for help, but by then, Matt's killer was gone. Incredibly, even though there were over 20 people in the parking lot that morning, not one of them happened to witness Matt's murder or catch a glimpse of the person who pulled the trigger. No one could even say for sure if the shooter was male or female. And here's the most frustrating part of this crime. There were several security cameras throughout the parking lot, but Matt's murder just happened to take place in a blind spot, so none of these cameras captured the crime on video, and there would be no existing footage of the shooter. Nothing was taken from Matt or his vehicle, so robbery was definitely not the motive. Investigators could not even find a shell casing from the fatal shot, and only had one clue to work with. The cameras did capture a light-colored two-door Ford Explorer in the parking lot that morning, and its suspicious action suggested that it was driven by the killer. About 20 minutes before Matt arrived, the surveillance footage showed the Explorer driving into the lot and circling it before parking in one of the spots. A few seconds later, a white Ford Probe pulled into the lot, and the Explorer backed out of its spot to follow it before it disappeared out of camera range. At around 8:10 or so, the Ford Explorer popped up on camera again and exited the parking lot, but then it returned to the lot about a minute later and disappeared out of camera range again. At 8:12, Matt's white Chevy Corsica could be seen pulling into the lot and driving towards his parking spot. 2 minutes later, after Matt's murder has taken place off camera, the Ford Explorer was captured leaving the parking lot again, and this is the last anyone ever saw of it. Now, it's easy to speculate about what happened in this footage. On the surface, the white Ford Probe that pulled into the parking lot 20 minutes before Matt did would have looked like the white Chevy Corsica Matt was driving. Since the Explorer pursued the Probe immediately after it arrived, it seems apparent that the driver mistakenly assumed it was Matt's car. For reasons unknown, the Explorer briefly exited the lot around 16 minutes later before it returned. When Matt finally arrived, the driver shot him the moment he stepped out of his vehicle before fleeing the scene. But the obvious question is, why? Well, that is the most troubling aspect of this case. This was an execution-style murder which seemed to have all the hallmarks of a professional contract hit. But why would anyone want to murder Matt Flores? By all accounts, he was just an all-around great guy. When investigators interviewed everyone who knew Matt, it sounds like no one said a bad word about him. They looked thoroughly into Matt's background and they couldn't find any known enemies or dark secrets or skeletons in his closet. No criminal activity, no drugs, no gambling, no financial problems, no extramarital affairs, no dirt whatsoever. So other than the surveillance footage of the Ford Explorer, investigators had nothing to work with. And unfortunately, that footage also happened to be in grainy black and white, so they couldn't even determine the exact color of the Explorer or get a read on its license plate. Applied Materials offered a $100,000 reward for information leading to an arrest or a conviction in this case, but it didn't help much. As you can imagine, Matt's wife Denise was pretty grief-stricken by the whole thing. She has never gotten remarried, and their newborn daughter Danielle was forced to grow up without her father. Unfortunately, there haven't been any major leads in this case at all for 23 years. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. Yes, this one definitely ranks up there on the list of unsolved murders which really bother me. There are many potential theories to consider here, but none of them make complete sense. Like I said earlier, Matt's death resembled a professional contract hit, but what kind of contract killer would choose to murder someone in their workplace parking lot in broad daylight when there were over 20 potential witnesses around? The crime was so brazen that you'd almost think the killer didn't even care if they got caught. Well, they did commit the murder in a blind spot where they couldn't be captured on camera. Would they have known about this ahead of time? Probably not, as the parking spots were unassigned, so there's no way the shooter could have anticipated where Matt would park. This person is either really, really good at what they do, or just really, really lucky. Of course, in some cases, there is no motive. Sometimes people are just sick and decide they want to murder random people for no reason other than a thrill kill. Yet the video evidence seems to suggest that's not the case here. If the killer was the driver of the Ford Explorer, and I'd say that's pretty likely, they waited around in that parking lot for 20 minutes before Matt showed up, so it does not seem like they just picked him at random. But the idea of him being targeted just doesn't make much sense either. Let's put aside the assumption that Matt didn't have an enemy in the world and consider the possibility that somebody wanted to kill him. The guy had just moved to California and was only on his 9th day of training at Applied Materials. Could Matt have angered someone so much during the short time he was there that they decided to murder him? Or did he make an enemy before he moved to California, who wanted Matt dead so badly that he decided to follow him there? I should mention that there are two other strange deaths which are very, very loosely connected to Matt and Applied Materials. In August of 1993, Han Suk-yun, an executive from Applied Materials Korea Division, was stabbed to death in his hotel room, located just over a mile from the company's headquarters. The killer was a woman named Cindy Kang, who was captured after running up debts on Yoon's stolen credit cards. It's unlikely this crime was connected to Matt's death, but police found it unusual that two employees from the same company were murdered during this 1 7-month period. And in April of 1993, an Army sergeant named Nicholas Gange went missing without explanation from Fort Stewart. Gange was serving there under Matt Flores, and 6 weeks before Gange's disappearance, Matt had to transfer him to another position because of his lackluster performance. The following February, right before Matt moved to California, Gange's remains were found in a wooded area about a mile from the base. The Army ruled his death to be suicide, though he appeared to have injuries which were consistent with blunt force trauma. In spite of these strange inconsistencies, it doesn't look like the suicide ruling was ever changed, and investigators never found any connection between Gange's death and Matt's murder. So let's look at all the different possible theories. Given how Matt's murder occurred less than 2 weeks after he was discharged from the Army, one could easily assume it's connected to something which happened during his service. One of the first mysteries I covered on this podcast was the unsolved murder of a former Marine named David Cox, and there are some eerie parallels between these two cases. Both murders took place in early 1994, just as the victim was starting a new job. However, the key difference here is that David Cox's life was steeped in controversy. He had been involved in a hazing incident during his time in the Marines which nearly got someone killed. He filed a lawsuit because the movie A Few Good Men based its story off that incident, and he was given outspoken radio interviews about the whole situation. But it doesn't sound like there was anything controversial like that about Matt Flores. Even though he fought in Operation Desert Storm, his 4 years in the Army seemed pretty routine and no different than thousands of other young men and women who have had a stint in the military. Matt was very well regarded by his superiors and his fellow servicemen, and he received an honorable discharge. I seriously doubt he was involved in some secret, covert military operation which put his life at risk, or that there's a massive conspiracy surrounding his death. I had theorized that David Cox's killer might have been a former Marine who had their life go to hell when they left the service and decided to take their rage out on him. So I wondered if someone who served alongside Matt Flores had a similar experience. They left the Army, had trouble adjusting to civilian life, and became jealous of Matt because he was successfully transitioning to a new career and had a great future ahead of him. But like I said earlier, Matt immediately traveled to the other side of the country after he left Fort Stewart. If Matt had remained in Georgia after he was discharged, I might be willing to consider the possibility that his murder was somehow connected to his military service. But how many people even knew he'd be working in California? Another theory is that there was some other candidate who applied for Matt's position at Applied Materials and became so enraged by the rejection that they decided to murder the person who took their job. But again, there's the issue that the actual job was going to be based in Dallas, and that stint in Silicon Valley was going to be nothing more than a 2-month training session. So would a rejected candidate even know who Matt was and that he'd be working at that particular building? It's also possible that the killer might have been someone who had a vendetta against Applied Materials and wanted to murder a representative from the company. But Matt was just a trainee who was pretty low on the totem pole at that point, so why target him? The most plausible theory on this case seems to be that Matt may have been a victim of mistaken identity. Remember, the security footage from that morning showed the Ford Explorer briefly pursuing a white Ford Probe through the parking lot before it backed off. This suggests that the killer initially mistook the Probe for Matt's white Chevy Corsica, and they were targeting someone driving a white vehicle. It's easy to see how there could have been a potential mix-up, as the Corsica was not Matt's personal vehicle, it was just a rental provided to him by the company, and he'd only been driving it for 9 days at this point. Since the shooting seemed to happen immediately after Matt climbed out of the car, it's not unfathomable that the killer could have fired their fatal shot into the back of Matt's head without even seeing his face, and did not realize that they murdered the wrong person. If this was a murder for hire orchestrated by someone else, and the shooter did not even know Matt Flores personally, then it's easy to see how a mistake like that could have happened. You might remember the previous podcast episode I did about the deaths of Chuck Morgan and Doug Johnston. Johnston died under very similar circumstances to Matt Flores. He was just an ordinary family man who showed up for a routine shift at his workplace when he was shot in the back of the head, execution style, while parking his car. It appeared that Johnston was the tragic victim of mistaken identity because an unknown contract killer murdered the wrong person. But here's a key difference. In that case, they figured out who the real target was supposed to be. It seemed likely that a contract had been put out on a journalist named Don Devereaux, and that Johnston was killed because Devereaux just happened to live across the street from his workplace and drove a similar-looking car. Matt Flores' case, it doesn't look like police uncovered anyone from his workplace who he could have been mistaken for. And it sounds like their investigation was pretty thorough. Police conducted over 1,000 interviews and studied over 2,500 questionnaires filled out by Applied Material employees, and it doesn't look like they found any likely candidates. There could have only been so many people who worked at that particular building and happened to drive a white vehicle. And how many of them had something in their background to make them a potential target for murder? As far as I know, it's not like another employee from that company was shot through the head in the months following Matt's death. So as you can see, even though there are a lot of problems with the idea that Matt was deliberately targeted, the mistaken identity theory still has its fair share of holes. However, I still think there is one possible scenario where that theory would make sense. I decided to check into Applied Materials headquarters in Silicon Valley, and they've got a lot of buildings in that area. Now, I can't vouch that the layout hasn't changed since 1994, but here's how it is today. The Applied Materials Technical Training Center was located on Bauer's campus, and Matt was working in Building 12. However, there are a lot of different buildings on this particular campus, numbered 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 11, and 12. And that's not all. Applied Materials also has two other campuses located within a few blocks, Arquis Campus and AKT Campus, and they each have multiple buildings. So what if Matt's killer mistakenly showed up to the wrong building? I know the police thoroughly checked the personnel of Building 12 and found no evidence that anyone there was a target for murder, but what if the killer's target actually worked in one of the other buildings on Bauer's campus? Or what if the target worked in one of the buildings on Arquis or AKT campus? Now, I can't be 100% certain, but it is possible that police did look into all the other Applied Materials buildings. Yet if you pull up this particular area on Google Earth, you'll see that there are a lot of similar buildings and parking lots in this particular area which don't even belong to Applied Materials. After all, this is Silicon Valley we're talking about, and I doubt the police would have had the resources to check into the backgrounds of every single person working in those buildings. So I'm inclined to think that this was a case of mistaken identity, but the real target did not work in Building 12, and the killer went to the wrong address. There might have been an individual who worked in Silicon Valley in 1994 and drove a white car, but they angered someone who decided to show up at their workplace one morning and put a bullet in their head. But because the killer got their buildings or their parking lots mixed up, and Matt Flores had the misfortune of driving a white car that morning, he became an innocent victim. And because the real target didn't work for Applied Materials and had no discernible connection to Matt, police were unable to crack the case. For all we know, this person might have learned about Matt's murder and decided to flee the country, and that's the last we ever heard from them. So unless Matt had some dark side no one knew about, or he was very good at concealing secrets, I can think of no conceivable reason that anyone would want to murder him in such a calculated fashion. It's a pretty horrible tragedy because he sounded like a great person who had a great life stolen away for reasons that had absolutely nothing to do with him. During the Unsolved Mystery segment, they show some adorable home video footage of Matt with his newborn daughter, and it's sad to think that she's an adult now and has never received any answers. I cannot imagine how difficult these past 23 years must have been for Matt's family to lose him like that and not have the faintest idea why. So if you have any information about the unsolved murder of Matt Flores, please contact the Santa Clara Police Department's tip line at 408-241-9495. That's 408-241-9495. Remember, Applied Materials is still offering a $100,000 reward for closure in this case. But if you just have your own theory about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email at robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. I want to send out a big thanks to all my loyal listeners and supporters out there, especially those from the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I want to provide a big thank you to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. And like I mentioned earlier, we also have a donate button on our website. So if you're feeling generous and want to express your appreciation for all the hard work we put into this podcast, we'd be extremely grateful. So have yourself a good week, and join me next Wednesday for a brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. ¶¶